Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
So Joel, just want to make sure you got my email ahead of the show tonight on what style face paint we were going with for the show, you know?
Yeah, I thought we were going to do something like the Road Warriors back and forth, but man, I think it was, I guess it was Sting Night, so my bad.
Yeah. Yes, yes. No, very cool. We were talking just for seconds off, off air here, and a fun main event, a scary MJF bump there at the end. I kind of gasped at that one, and glad that he was able to kind of, you know, continue on with the match and it was a good one, and we'll get there. We'll make sure to get to that in greater detail. But I wanted to start the show off tonight with the Kyle O'Reilly debut, a surprise debut, kind of.
Yeah.
Not really, but, you know, he gets involved in the Adam Cole-Orange Cassidy match. He poses with Cole and Bobby Fish at the end, and then Cole leaves. And we'll talk in great depth about kind of that whole angle, but to start, though, Joel, what do you make of Kyle O'Reilly tonight, and what are his prospects, in the immediate future anyway, in AEW?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really cool to see Kyle O'Reilly, obviously, in AEW since, you know, we just came off the Wednesday Night Wars in NXT, and now we see, you know, most of the Undisputed Era. We're still missing Roderick Strong, but, you know, we got the three, main parts of that group, and now they're debuting on the opposite show, which is, you know, something that's really significant. I think for Kyle O'Reilly, I mean, it's always hard to say in AEW nowadays, like, how far someone's ceiling is, you know, as far as being a single star, because there's just so much talent on the roster that it'd be really hard to predict, you know, how he's going to get some time to, you know, grow into being one of their major stars. But I think for right now, he's been thrust into one of their major programs that they have that's going to be whatever happens next with the Elite. Obviously, the Young Bucks didn't take too kindly to seeing the debut of Kyle O'Reilly because Cole is kind of playing to his old guys from the rival promotion. So it's just going to kind of be, you know, what develops out of this and, you know, how does Kenny Omega respond to all this upon his return?
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. And they definitely planted seeds tonight where you can kind of look at the immediate future, and I agree that it's going to be kind of Elite versus quote-unquote Undisputed Era stuff, not necessarily in like this blood feud, but just, you know, tension, drama, you know, you're kind of, you know, Elite type stuff in AEW, I think, you know, the longer drawn-out stories, I think, you know, with anything that the Young Bucks and the Elite do, there's going to be hits, there's going to be misses too. And, you know, we'll see kind of what the path is here for O'Reilly. I like this debut. You know, when the prospects came up of O'Reilly, you know, that, hey, okay, his contract's coming up with NXT and, you know, he's clearly going to be somebody that AEW is going to look at. He's got a lot of, you know, past opponents and other advocates in that company. And, you know, I think there would have been almost like a tease to go, all right, everybody thinks he's going to debut in this way. So let's try to, you know, pull everybody in that direction and then surprise and then do it a different way. But I like the simplicity of this. Like there's a clear, obvious connection. Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish. Like it's right there. It's right there. And the core AEW fan base all know what that connection is. And so it's unavoidable. So I was glad to see in this instance that, hey, okay, AEW not getting too cute with this. They're just going to tell the story that's right there in front of us. And it's A to B, but it works. And I think it's probably the most interesting thing that they could do with O'Reilly's debut, even though it wasn't this big, shocking surprise.
Yeah, and I don't think that a big shocking surprise is really fits O'Reilly's character at this point. I think that, you know, them all but telling you last week that, you know, he was going to make his debut, I think that was fine. You know, as a draw for people, you know, they kick it off with the Adam Cole match, and so you just assume, like, all right, let's stay tuned because you're probably going to get the debut of Kyle O'Reilly. You know, if you, you know, are one of the more kind of insider fans, I think that the general audience probably didn't know, you know, what Adam Cole was referring to, other than it was probably likely going to be the surprise of somebody. But I think that the way that they did this was fine because it's just logical to the story that, you know, he's adding another one of his guys to the group. You know, it wasn't one of the big, you know, shocking debuts. And I kind of tweeted about it just saying that, you know, with so many of these debuts, I'm almost kind of feeling numb to it with so many guys, you know, coming onto the scene. But, you know, what you mentioned, Zach, is really how I'm feeling about this too, is that, that this really just kind of fit the O'Reilly character, that it didn't need to be this bombastic thing, that it could just be, you know, adding this guy to the group. And now it just kind of adds another layer to whatever is going to happen next with the Elite.
Yeah. And so are you, so knowing kind of what the Young Bucks do and what their, you know, what their style of pro wrestling is, like I said, there's some really high highs with it. And then there's some misses, you know, there's Ghostbusters stuff. And then there's, you know, classic cage match stuff with the Lucha Brothers, right? Like it's a really, they're all along the spectrum as far as that goes and their presentation and what they do as characters. You know, does this, you know, seemingly we're going down the path of an Elite versus quote undisputed era feud here at some point? I think it's, you know, going to navigate that way. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how worried that this gets two Young Bucks and not enough, like, hey, two top teams dream match colliding head on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it all remains to be seen. And what I'm kind of thinking is that the Young Bucks, even though it seems like it doesn't seem like they've been heels for like a super long time, but it also just seems like naturally, like these guys should start kind of moving towards being baby faces again. Because even though, like, you know, Nick Jackson is really cool, funny with like all the different, you know, things that he's been doing, changing his appearance and whatnot. And I think that they play the heel roles well, but for all the things that you mentioned too, Zach, that, you know, some of the goofiness and zaniness that they is just their natural personalities, especially in Kenny Omega, that I think that them just kind of moving towards that position and kind of them being the baby faces eventually against the heel undisputed era could be a really hot program. I mean, that could be a really top type of match. You know, that could be maybe not a pay-per-view level main event, but, you know, one of their big TV specials. It could be something like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, let's pause right there. We got a lot more to discuss with that angle. I want to get your take on the Adam Cole side of things and what this does for him in particular, because obviously he's going to be a big part of it. But we'll stop there for a second, set the table for the show, and start taking calls too. So this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the December 22nd, 2021 edition of AEW Dynamite Holiday Bash. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn filling in for Wade. And as always, Wade will be on the VIP side of things a little bit later, giving his full rundown and analysis of tonight's AEW show. It's on the VIP side of the house. If you're interested, pwtorch.com/govip. You can check out Wade's daily Wade Keller hotline, and you can check out his specific focus on AEW show and a host of others. That's really unique content that I think you'll very much enjoy. So give it a shot, pwtorch.com/govip. The other voice you hear tonight is Joel Donnell from pwtorch.com. Joel, always a blast to talk AEW, man. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, Zach, I'm very excited. I was just checking my, you know, Skype for you, but the call history, it's been a while since we've done a pod together. So I was really looking forward to this tonight.
Yeah, man, me too. Absolutely. Yeah, it has been a while here. I'm looking at the same thing, and yes, it's been a bit. And, you know, as I mentioned to you before we started recording here, I wasn't sure how much of a newsworthy show we'd get because of the holiday and people are off their schedules and obviously, you know, distracted with other things and family and traveling. So I didn't know how much they would, you know, pump into this. And, you know, coming out the other end 2 hours later, you know, there's some big is big stuff to talk about. So excited to get into that with you and open up the phone lines here. We'll do it right now. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Please press 1. If you're in the queue and want to get on, it gives a little hand raise on the switchboard here to let me know that you want in. If you don't want to chat with us, but you want to give us your opinion, WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com is an email address you can use. That's WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com, and we'll get to some emails as the show progresses here. But Joel, with that said, we'll go ahead here and we'll take the first call, and we'll start with 705. 705, you're up first. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Zach. Hey, Joel. Hitting from London, Ontario. How you guys doing?
Hitting, doing great, man. Always good to talk to you. What'd you think of Dynamite tonight, the old holiday bash?
Yeah, this was I'm glad they didn't phone it in. I thought they might, but this was just another, you know, standard episode of Dynamite, sort of a maintenance episode, which I think was really necessary. A quick note on the Kyle O'Reilly debut. I didn't like the presentation of it. I thought the camera zooming up on the wrestler in the ring when it was clear that the crowd is looking up at the ramp and getting excited for someone coming down, I think that sort of telegraphed it a little for me. If he was a little hooded at first and did a big reveal, that would have probably, it would have fit his star power compared to someone like, you know, they debuted Jamie Hayter one time when I think only Excalibur knew who she was.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would have been good. And also, there's just this moment at the end where Kyle's just sort of standing there after he's beat up Best Friends. He's just sort of looking at the hard camera and not doing anything while the Bucks are there. And there's no stare down. Like, a stare down would have been good between, like him and Fish and him just sort of looking over their shoulder and just being like, okay, I acknowledge you guys, but, you know, we're with Adam Cole now. I think something like that would have been good, but it just felt very awkward, just felt a bit like they didn't talk this through at the beginning. I'm not sure what they were going for by just not even having them, by just having them stare at the hard camera for so long. Am I reading a little too much into this, you think?
Well, I think so. I took it a different way, and it depends, I think, on how you look at, like, the story they're telling right now. And so to me, you know, the person to watch and what they set up was Adam Cole to be the one who's a little conflicted. He's the one that's got one group of friends on the other side, his other buddies on the other side, and, you know, his current group, the Young Bucks, are kind of like, hey, what's this? And they're looking at him kind of going, hey, what's the situation here? What's this? And then Adam Cole kind of just leaves. And so I was okay with there not being like an immediate kind of like face off, because they're clearly not going to go to the match right away. Right. So I think the nuance here is it's all about Cole. It's how he drives the story. It's how he navigates both groups. Joel, that's how I took it. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you hitting that, you know, the same thing with the camera shot, the fans kind of looking down the rampway. I think there's some production things that could have been done better, especially with O'Reilly, you know, creeping up behind Cassidy as well. So I think there's some things that could have been changed there. But Zach, to your point, that's how I'm interpreting the story right now, is that the Bucks don't have a beef with O'Reilly and Fish, that they're more just kind of wondering what are the motivations of Cole, you know, bringing in another one of his guys, where they thought, you know, they're pretty much set with Cole and the Bucks. I mean, they're the super clique. And then all these other guys are kind of starting to come in there that Cole seems to be closer with. And so, you know, it's less of the beef between the Bucks and Fish and O'Reilly, and something that we're going to see more play out over time.
Yeah, hitting back to you. What do you make of our analysis?
Man, that's fair enough, and I don't want to dwell too much on it. I actually want to move on to the world title follow-up. I thought they did as good a job as they could following up with this, and I didn't think they'd follow up with it. I thought they'd just be like, okay, we had the match, let's move on. We've got a bunch of talent that we have to feature, but this has to be the Hangman show now. He's got to he's really got to set the pace, I think, for television. And so I'm wondering, like, the last 5 weeks when I've called in, why haven't I really talked a lot about Hangman Page and Bryan Danielson, even though it's, you know, I like the rivalry, but there's just something about it that I feel is missing. And as I got to thinking, I have a few hypotheses here. So, yes, we got to see some evolution of the Adam Page character here, but it's really the Bryan Danielson heel character that I feel like I'm not as emotionally compelled by. I think he's doing a good performance, and I get a kick out of it, but I don't know if I should be getting a kick out of it. Like, his smirk just sort of gives off this feeling of, I'm here to have some fun playing the role of heel. And as good as he can be, especially in the ring as a psychological heel, I don't think he gives off this aura of like a nasty mega villain who needs to be defeated at all costs. And I can look at Danielson working with Dark Order, and like when he cuts a promo on John Silver, I just kind of chuckle along with him. Like, you know, he's just taking these comedic pot shots at them. And Moxley, on the other hand, who I think was supposed to be slated for this, he would have been very believable. Like when he squashed Wheeler Yuta, I felt something. I felt this unease. And even though I have no idea who Wheeler Yuta is or why he's with Best Friends, when Moxley squashed him prior to the tournament match, that sort of instilled in me that, hey, this guy is not really doing something right. And if he continued doing that, if he did that with the Dark Order, he wouldn't have this smirk. He wouldn't turn it. He wouldn't lean into the mockery as much. And I feel like he would be more presentable as someone who, like this villain that actually has to be stopped, or he will just continue on a very, very dangerous rampage, no pun intended. So what have you made of Daniel's character so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really good point. And I think one of the things that I've looked at this whole situation through the lens of, it is a curveball. I mean, for sure. I mean, you're kind of booking your way. You had a roadmap of where you wanted to go, and then at the last second, due to unforeseen circumstances, you know, Moxley had to bow out and take care of himself, and rightfully so. And, you know, so you're kind of left with like, okay, what do we do now? And I think for Adam Page, you needed an established opponent, you know, like Moxley would have been. And, you know, you could have gone with somebody in the middle of the card. Like, you could have gone down the Miro route. That would have worked. But I really think to establish Adam Page, you needed, like, somebody that people know and, you know, that can help him have really compelling matches. And Danielson, you know, checks those boxes. The thing that I think was missing from Danielson's heel turn was, like, the actual turn. Like, he won the tournament at Full Gear, and then the next night he just kind of confronts Adam Page and is kind of just like this jerk to him out of nowhere. And so, to me, if I'm kind of like reading into to your mind there, hitting, like, maybe that's why there's no deep investment in him as a heel, because there wasn't that moment where you're like, okay, now he's this bad guy. He's just being this kind of jerky dude that, you know, kind of makes you chuckle to a handful of baby faces. So that's my guess. Now, at the same time, you know, not everybody's going to be a heel like Jon Moxley would have been. I mean, Jon Moxley as a heel opposite Adam Page is something I really hope we get to see down the road, because you're right, Hidden. Like, he brings a level of danger and credibility and just kind of like this maniacal tone to his heel character that I think jumps off the page. That's totally different from what Danielson's doing as a heel. And so that could just be a matter of preference. And so that's where I'm at with Danielson. I did have a problem with the segment, though, that I wanted to get in. And then, Joel, I'm going to throw to you. Overall, I think it worked. I think it worked well to set up the rematch. I think they got where they needed to go. But, you know, it's one of these – Adam Page is the AEW world champion now. I mean, he is the champion. I think we've seen the story play out of, okay, Page's ups and downs. He's not confident in himself. He doesn't know who he is. And when he wins that title at Full Gear, it's like that's to me, that's the bow on that story. And so, you know, to come out and say like, hey, I'm really disappointed. I've never felt less of a champion, you know, than I did after going 60 minutes with Bryan Danielson. It's like, hey, to me, it's like, as the champion, you go 60 minutes and you don't get beat. I mean, that's a win. You keep your title. And I think I want to see Paige turn the corner here, Joel, and be the confident champion and not
absolutely
always the doubted, like, I'm doubting myself champion. I think we've been there, done that. We need to see phase two here, Joel.
Absolutely. I mean, that's how I was feeling with this segment, is that I think it just works, you know, to get to the next destination. But I think it also illuminated a lot of the flaws of, you know, between Paige and Bryan Danielson. Where I've talked for a while about Paige is that we've seen so much of like the same type of stuff with him, with failing, succeeding, not believing in himself. And I think it was really time, like you said, Zach, that once he beat Kenny Omega, that he needed to evolve into the next evolution of what Hangman Page is. And so he comes out here again tonight, and it just is, feels like there's really something missing from this character. I mean, he just doesn't have the fire. He just doesn't have – there's just something about him that's missing there. And I think that part of it is that confidence part. But also I think that just Bryan Danielson, even though they had a great match, Bryan Danielson is so good at what he does, I think that this just really was not you know, obviously, like you pointed out, it's not a good situation with everything that happened with Jon Moxley, and they had to think quickly on their feet. But I just don't think that it was helpful to Paige as far as getting him over as the next champion. You know, Danielson is excellent at playing the heel role, but as you saw again tonight, that people just, they just want to cheer him. I mean, they'll play along for some of the lines that he says and whatnot, but really, they just wanted to see this guy, you know, Bryan Danielson, the good babyface who's, you know, puts on these great matches, and we cheer him because he's such a great wrestler. And now he's trying to play this opposite character where he's such a bigger star than Hangman Page, that I think it's really kind of diminished Page in some ways. So, I mean, we'll see what happens next with Page, but I'd really like to see him evolve this character.
I was that's well said. I was very much a defender of how they booked the championship match at Winter is Coming, you know, like, hey, go 60 minutes. You don't want to beat Danielson yet. Classic match. Like I think it totally worked. But looking in the rearview mirror, if I knew that this promo was going to happen today, like the way that it did,
yeah,
I think I would have gone back in time and put Paige over clean, because you're right, Joel, like Danielson did come across as a bigger star, and that was, you know, exasperated by the fact that Paige walks out there and goes, yeah, I'm super disappointed. I don't feel like a champion, like, as he's holding the belt. And I think it's just too soon to go back to that. I think he got kind of where he needed to go by the end of the promo, saying like, hey, I was seconds away from drowning you, and at you know, on January 5th, that's exactly what I'm going to do. It's like, that's what we need to see. That's the Adam Page we need to see. That needs to be, there needs to be a bright light on that. And look, he's got a great opponent to work off of, but only if you do it and it's booked in the right way. Otherwise, you could be in a bit of trouble. Hitting back to you. Any comments on our comments? We said a lot there.
Yeah, I'm not as doubtful of the Hangman Page self-doubt per se. I just wish that he did it with a bit more anger, with a bit more zest than just depression, right? Because we saw that already, and frankly, a lot of it aired on BTE. But we don't need to see the sad drinking. But I think this promo, if he just had one more line before Danielson's music hit, instead of, I feel like an incomplete champion, just be a little bit more angry at yourself, that, you know, point to like one scientific, you know, physical moment in the match where you could have taken advantage. I remember Stone Cold cutting promos where he sort of critiqued his own his own work, especially earlier in his career, but he'd have this anger where it would sort of mask the fact that he's, you know, doubting himself, and he'd still come across confident. So I think that just one more line would have helped. I also have a follow-up, quick follow-up to this. Who do you think the judges are going to be in the match that we're going to get? I think they might bring in Eric Bischoff as one of them, but I'm not sure.
That was
sure.
My joke on Twitter.
Yeah.
It gives Bischoff another chance to appear on Dynamite.
Yes. I don't know. That's a really good question. I wouldn't put it past Eric Bischoff to show up. I've known him and Tony Khan have had their differences, but hey, you never know. Yeah, Joel, I don't know. Any thoughts on that? I really hadn't thought about it, and I'm not sure.
Well, didn't Hangman just say, like, he gives a chance for some old guys to get some paydays? So I would assume that they're going to, you know, tap into, you know, who's available of some of the old-time wrestlers. I don't know. Where are they next week? Could it be a local theme? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's January 5th, so it's 2 weeks.
Okay. 2 weeks so, away. Yeah, it's at the Prudential Center. So I don't know. I mean, probably some legends of some sort, but
yeah,
no,
that's what
no
I think
names that immediately come to mind.
Right. I think it's going to be like, yeah, some kind of, you know, older legends that aren't in, you know, the WWE web right now. You know, it's not going to be Steve Austin, right? So
maybe Kurt Angle. There you go.
Right. Could be exactly somebody like that. So yeah, and that's kind of where my head's at too. Did you have any guesses outside of Eric Bischoff?
Bret Hart, I think, would be good. Bret Hart and Kurt Angle sharing a booth, I think, would be fantastic. I don't know what Bret's up to, but I see no reason why they can't get him for just a night just to sit there. He introduced the AW title, right, back at that, whatever that show was. So I think he'd be fantastic. Imagine him sharing a booth with Eric Bischoff, for God's sakes. That would just be awful. We'll speculate more afterwards. I'm going to move on to the Lambert promo. So I thought Lambert's promo this week was better than on Rampage. At least he shined a bigger spotlight on Men of the Year than he otherwise tends to do in his promos. Because I find that the heat's on him, and you can put any two generic heels with him, and they'll have the same heat that Scorpio Sky and Paige have. But tonight, I thought Sky and Paige just didn't really help themselves with their nonverbals. I thought they came across like six-year-olds with their childish mannerisms in the background. It wasn't the right kind of heat with me. And they don't have an edge to them that makes me think, oh, it's a good thing. I mean, if I were Lambert, I would choose these two over any other heel pairing in AEW. There's just nothing that stands out to me about them yet. And I also got a huge kick out of Lambert acknowledging that, yeah, Tony Khan wants him to try and get Cody cheered when, you know, when Sky and Paige did their fake laugh in the background, I was like, I actually laughed right with them. I was like, yeah, I mean, this is true. Like, Cody is a bigger dick than you are. Like, he is an ignorant dick. And they're just not getting at the root of the problem here. They're sort of playing along with what we're thinking, but they're ultimately not diagnosing the actual issue. So I'm curious to see where this goes. I mean, Rampage, on which is Saturday, I think, this week, that match should be a spectacle. I mean, this crowd wasn't really that vocal tonight for some reason, but if this was in New York or something, I think it'd be more interesting. But I'm really curious to see that match. What do you guys think of the Lambert promo and this general direction they're going in?
Yeah, Joel, I'll throw to you first on that.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, Hitton, I like that it was more kind of about, you know, getting the titles for Men of the Year. But, you know, I agree that this whole time that they've been together, it still hasn't worked for me. I mean, I still don't see why Lambert has chosen these guys, and I don't think that it's really gotten them over at all. I think that people look forward to seeing Lambert on the microphone, but I don't think that it makes people any more interested to see, Paige or Sky wrestle.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I thought it was a better night for Lambert. Just in general, I thought he had a little bit more direction to his promo than just kind of trolling AEW or his opponent. So I like that too. Yeah, in terms of where it goes, I'm interested. I'm like you, Hidden. I'm real interested to see how things play out on Saturday night for that TNT Championship match, Cody versus Sammy Guevara. I think it's going to be telling in a lot of ways, like which direction they go with this. I mean, they're playing into it now, I think. You know, when you have Cody kind of faking going towards the heel tunnel and going back through the babyface tunnel a couple of weeks ago, it's like you're acknowledging that it's happening. And so as Cody continues to have matches, like I think you're going to see him booked in that direction too. And so I'm not saying that I think Cody's going to win the TNT Championship again, but it's just going to be interesting to see how they go, you know, acknowledging the fact that he gets more booed week in and week out. And it's like, as they try to turn it, they're unsuccessful and the boos just keep getting louder. So this is one of his biggest matches since this has all kind of been going down. And I'm real interested to see how it plays out for that reason. Hinton, back to you. Any final comments, man, before we jump off and then try to get some more callers in here?
No, I think that's it. I wanted to say I thought the women's match was good tonight. I wasn't expecting Ruby Soho to win, but I mean, I don't think they're as high on Nyla Rose as I am. I just for some reason I see her and I'm like she should go over, but. Yeah, Ruby Soho moves on, and Cargill's about to have the biggest match of her career against Thunder Rosa. It's a real test of Thunder Rosa, I think, to see if she's able to carry Cargill to an acceptable match. So looking forward to the TBS title picture, but other than that, happy holidays, guys. Merry Christmas, and thanks for chatting with me today.
Thanks for the call, Hidden. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas to you as well. Really, really appreciate it. Great topics. Yeah, Joel, what did you think of the women's match?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was overbooked with the distractions at times, and then obviously distracting at the beginning of the match, trying to get that jacket off of Ruby. It's unfortunate that I feel like in some ways that this tournament has almost kind of been forgotten as we're now talking about a new tournament, the Owen Hart one. But I still think that the culmination of this can be good. Seeing the direction that they take the TBS championship. And I think that Soho going over Rose is a fine choice. You know, I agree with Hinton that I'm probably higher on Nyla Rose than other people. I think she's got some good heel instincts. But, it seems like that they're shaping up that this final match could either be, really could be Thunder Rosa or Soho, but I could also see them wanting to go all the way with Jade Cargill and putting her in that championship position against Soho.
Yeah, I like this match too. I think I liked it a little bit more than you did. It is kind of a bummer that I think this tournament just went on for so long, like, and kind of in the background too, like not front and center. So, and it's been on different shows and like, so I think it's just been kind of just lost in the shuffle, unfortunately. But I think if you go back and watch it in full later on, there's some good material in there, and I thought tonight was no different. I think, you know, they're going to Ruby versus Jade, perhaps, you know, just to get Jade a shot at, I don't know that you want to do babyface Ruby and Thunder Rosa at this time, and, you know, Jade could use a big win, and I don't think she's going to become the TBS champion, but a spot in that final, I think, you know, elevates her a bit and it certainly gets her plenty of experience with the likes of Thunder Rosa and then Ruby Soho. Like that's really good company to help bring Jade Cargill along. We'll go back to the phone line. 718. Thanks for waiting. You are up. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Hi guys. This is Mike from Queens, New York. I thought it was a pretty great Dynamite tonight. Selfishly, I was excited because they announced when the Hangman Danielson match is, and my wife had gotten us tickets to go for early.
I was gonna
Christmas
ask.
Gifts. So that was great.
Yeah, that's gonna be something, man. I mean, you know, that was a heck of a match, you know, the first time around, and they're gonna pull out all the stops to try to top that first one, or at least match it, you know. And so I think you're gonna get, you know, all systems go for both those guys, and it's gonna be one heck of a match, and a really big show too, you know, with the TBS premiere, all that other business stuff in it too. So yeah, you picked a good Christmas gift this year.
Yeah, exactly. I thought that I want to actually talk about what you guys were talking about with Hangman and him being like still in the depression character. You know, like I kind of enjoyed that he came out and just basically was like, okay, until I successfully defend this title once, like I will not feel like a champion. And you know, I think that they've done a lot of nuance in this storyline. And, you know, depression just doesn't go away. So I thought that was kind of like a cool thing. And I feel like we will be getting a dominant Hangman right after he actually gets his first win. And it makes that first win so much more impressive if the way that they're doing it. To me, at least, I feel that way.
Well, that's definitely what they're going for. I mean, no doubt about it. And I think, you know, it's just whether or not, okay, do you want to show, like, just leaps of progression with the Page character, or do you not? And I just think, to me, and look, like, hey, this it's not like tonight totally shot his whole title reign in the foot or anything like that. I just, my point is that when you're champion, you know, you got to kind of act, you got to act like it. You got to act like the part. And I think, like, that's, I want to see, like, that development happen. And I like the story, and I like the emotion and the drama behind it and the connectivity that they've had throughout this Hangman thing. But, you know, you got to pivot away from that at some point. And hey, if he gets this definitive win over Danielson and on you go, then great. I mean, it's just like anything else in pro wrestling. It's all in the follow-up, and we'll see. But I think, Mike, to your point, like, that's certainly what they were trying to go for tonight, and so clearly it resonated, and that's okay. Joel, any thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you, Zach, that I think that's really what they're going for. I mean, that's like, you know, what they say in UFC, like, you're not a true champion until you've actually defended your title once. And, you know, I was someone who wanted to see, you know, Hangman actually beat Bryan Danielson last week, but it's obvious that they wanted to do two matches to have to, you know, put something really big on this TBS show. So I definitely want to see, you know, of course, the follow-up of, you know, how does he evolve this character? Because, I mean, beating Bryan Danielson would be a really big deal, you know, within AEW. I mean, Kenny Omega couldn't even do it. They also went to a time limit draw. So, you know, that could be a major shift in the character when he's actually able to accomplish that.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. It could easily be. And if that happens, that's great. I mean, that's the champion that Adam Page needs to be, you know. And Mike, you can call back and give me a hard time.
Well, I do agree. And I think that once he gives Danielson his first loss, like, he will probably make that switch where they have some other heels kind of like lined up for him to kind of run through until his next bigger feud, I'm guessing at the next pay-per-view. And I do agree though, what you guys are talking about with Bryan Danielson, where he's kind of like playing a heel with a wink and a nod at times, which upsets me. Even that first night, you know, when they started, he made the point of, I wrestled right after I won my championship at Mania, and they booed him for that. And he goes, oh, of course you would boo hard work in Virginia. And he said it with a smile. And it was almost just like, you could see that he was just excited to say that more than he meant it. You
right.
know, it was like, well, we'll play this card. And I do feel that after he loses, you know, he'll probably kind of reshuffle his character to go back to being a babyface. It's just unfortunate that what happened with Mox happened, because I feel like, you know, Moxley and Page are two sides of the same coin and would have had a really great storyline right here, with the way, you know, just they are two guys who have troubles and they deal with them in different ways, and that would be an exciting thing to see. But, they obviously are not afraid to give Bryan Danielson a loss, considering everyone pretty much thinks that John Moxley would have given Brian Danielson that first loss in the tournament.
Right.
But
I wanted to talk.
Oh, sorry.
No. Go ahead. Back to you.
Oh, I just wanted to. My real reason for calling was I wanted to talk about the main event and just how much fun it was. A little sloppy at times, but you could just see how much fun everyone in that match was having. Like it just looked like a lot of fun tonight.
It really did. It really did. I thought it was a heck of a kind of an action-packed main event, and I think, Joel, that some of it was sloppy to be sure, but none of it in a way that, like, it was sloppy in a good way, in my opinion, of just like where it didn't feel choreographed. Like some of like the slop, you could say, was like, you know, hey, okay, these guys are fighting out there, and sometimes like a fight, real fight, isn't pretty. And I thought like some of the sloppiness like helped play into that. I thought, you know, CM Punk is really starting to come around in the ring in terms of kind of getting the feel back. Like it's only a handful of months here. What, close to four months since he came back and had that first match. And, you know, you can see in that first match where he's like, you know, he's still thinking through the steps. All right, I'm going to go here and then I'm going to do this. And then it's this move and that move. And you can tell here now, 4 months in, that it's really starting to click and he's starting to just, you know, just go. And I think that's going to really open up some great opportunities and some great matches. So yeah, Joel, I mean, I really like this. I thought the MJF bump was real scary. Glad he's okay, as I said at the top of the show, but yeah, fun way to cap off an exciting night. The Sting factor was good. So, you know, nothing like too in depth, but just a fun wrestling match.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this, with having a, you know, fun, you know, six-man tag match at the Greensboro Coliseum before Christmas. You know, I mean, it's just really, I mean, I know it's not the last Dynamite or AEW show of 2021, but, I mean, you just look at the spectacle of seeing Sting tagging with CM Punk and Darby Allin. I mean, who would have thought that was going to happen, you know, especially against MJF and FTR. So, I mean, it was really just about the spectacle and all the guys wearing the face paint and being there in Greensboro and just kind of, you know, getting all the feels and having just kind of a fun, feel-good match. You know, where none of these guys are the you know, the high spots guys where they're going to do all the crazy stuff that we typically see in a six-man tag match. So, you know, there's going to be a couple, you know, awkward spots like MJF, you know, landing on his head. He is not a guy who's typically being tossed out of the ring like that or doing dives and stuff. So, you know, those types of things are going to happen. But I think overall the fans really enjoyed it, and I think it came across on TV as, like, just a fun spectacle.
Yeah, yeah, and from a storyline perspective, I think there's a lot there too. You know, you had the story of the match where it's like, okay, CM Punk is not getting his hands on MJF, you know, so you have that still to play into. And then also, you had the babyfaces go over, and like that, I think based on what MJF did after the match on the commentary microphone, like, I think that's clearly going to be a trigger for him, you know, to like dive into the CM Punk thing even further than he already is. So I like the storyline consistency with the two. And you know, the Hinton earlier said it's kind of like this filler episode of Dynamite, reset the deck, set the table again for what you're going to do. And that's okay. And you need to have those kind of episodes for sure. And when you can have them like they did tonight and still have this kind of fun main event at the end, that, you know, that's what you want, so that these shows that are foundational don't necessarily feel that way. And I think they accomplished that goal tonight, Joel.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there was just a lot of stuff where just kind of cleaning up, setting it into the new year with two major shows, you know, the one that that Mike's going to be going to, and then the Battle of the Belts show, that you got a lot of stuff that you got to start promoting very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, back to you. Anything else tonight?
You know, it's funny you guys talking about how it looked like the crowd was having fun as well. And it was interesting that it was the first time I saw, like, a lot of little kids in the front row. There was, like, five, like, girls looked like they were younger than, like, 10, all in the front row. And I haven't really seen that a lot. It was just like, oh, okay, everyone is here for Christmas, having a good time. Like, it was strange to see at an AEW show. It's kind of funny that, like, Malachi Black is out there destroying two people, and you see like a little girl clapping, you know, right after. But it was yeah. it was an interesting thing to see that. As much as I like the crowd, unfortunately, there was that one guy with an awful transphobic sign mm-hmm. for the Nyla match, and oh. I was just glad they got rid of him right away. It was disgusting.
Absolutely. Lifetime ban, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, people wanted to see the guy who ran down Seth get beat up, but I was like, I just want this guy to get out of here, you know? Like, this is
yep.
awful. Like, no excuse for that.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I can't say it any better. I mean, there's no place for that on these shows, and there's no place for it, not just on these shows, but anywhere, period. And, yeah, I mean, I hope he's taken care of, and I hope he, you know, does not get the ability, yeah, the privilege to purchase AEW tickets
yep.
anymore. Go ahead, Joel.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, he lost his privilege to go to any sort of AEW shows. I'm sure he paid a pretty penny to be up close there in front of the camera, but you just don't do that. You don't do that. I mean, what a terrible thing.
Yeah, 1,000%. Mike,
yeah.
thanks. Any closing comments tonight, man?
No, not to end on a dour note, but yeah, I thought it was a good show. I'm excited to see Kyle there. I do agree it was a little weird to, like, see them all just stand in Undisputed Era stance without actually doing the hand thing and kind of look around. Like, if you didn't know that's what they did in NXT, then you would just be like, what are these guys doing? But you know,
yeah.
they try and play to their crowd thinking that, like, okay, they trust their crowd to know this. And, yeah, just fun to see that. It, even though it was a maintenance show, like, there was a lot of things that still moved. Yeah, mm-hmm. thought it was great.
Absolutely.
And I hope you guys have a happy holidays.
Yeah, you too, Mike. Thanks so much for the call, man. Really appreciate it. Good talking to you. Happy holidays to you as well.
Thanks a lot.
All
thanks.
Right. We'll go next to 438. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, guys. This is Alex from Montreal.
Alex, great to talk to you, man. Welcome to the show. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a very satisfying show overall. I thought the match quality was there. I really enjoyed actually the Ruby Soho and Nyla match. I thought that was, it had some stuff that neither woman had really pulled off in matches before. Like I liked, you know, Ruby kind of going for the Poison Rana, but obviously Nyla's way too big for that. And then Nyla kind of like whipping her back into the turnbuckle. And, I know that Ruby is really good at selling. Like it's one of the things I've noticed since she has come into AEW. So when she was selling her arm and kind of just like holding it limp on her at her side for, you know, near the end of the match, she kind of had me. But with the commentary kind of focusing on, like, you know, she's had two shoulder surgeries and things like that, that was the part where I clicked, where I was like, no, they probably had that queued up, right? Like they probably knew that that's what was going to happen. But and then when she hugged, you know, the previous caller was talking about the girls at ringside, and Ruby went and hugged a couple of them. I was wondering if maybe they were her family or something. But anyway, she was just like a really good seller in this match. And I thought Nyla did her job too, to, you know, make Ruby look like $1 million with her offense. And that is the best the No Future has looked since Ruby has come into AEW. And this match has really kind of sold me even more so on Ruby Soho as being the first ever TBS champion, if that's the route they go. I'm actually totally fine with Jade Cargill being champion. I'm totally okay with Thunder Rosa being champion or with Ruby Soho being champion. But tonight, I thought it went a long way in terms of making Ruby Soho a believable champion, someone who fights from underneath. And a lot of it had to do with her selling of that shoulder and just kind of holding it limply at her side while Nyla was kind of like pounding on her, and Aubrey was in there as well. So what did you guys think of that that match overall, and what have you thought of Ruby Soho's journey in AEW so far as kind of you know, an underdog babyface who's overcoming, you know, giant monsters?
I liked the match a lot too. Yeah, I think you know, we briefly touched on it a little bit earlier, so I think I liked it a little bit better than Joel did. But Joel, I'll throw it to you in a minute. So I think Ruby has done a nice job so far in AEW. You know, I mean, she's been in this tournament that has taken up a lot of weeks of TV, and like I said, has been in the background. So she hasn't really been at the forefront of these shows for that reason. And because the tournament's taken so long, she's even less so because she's not in every match in the tournament, obviously. So, you know, it's kind of like a slow burn for her, but I think this is kind of, it looks to be her crowning moment in the company to this point. I think that's the road we're going down here. I think you're going to see Jade Cargill beat Thunder Rosa, get her a signature win. And then I think, you know, to keep the TBS championship in line with the TNT title on the men's side, that is something that's defended regularly. I think you got to get it on somebody like Ruby, who can work with a lot of people and have good matches with a lot of people and establish that belt as that. It's not that Jade Cargill can't be a good TBS champion, but if that's going to be like the kind of the work rate championship, she's just not in that position and really is not going to be that kind of wrestler. That's not her thing. And so I think you need to get it on somebody who can kind of be what the belt is. And I think that's Ruby at this point. And I think she gives it credibility. And I think she's clearly somebody that Tony Khan likes and is going to, you know, continue to build around. So I don't necessarily take anything specific out of this match outside of what we already know, which is that she's a good wrestler and she can build sympathy as a babyface with how she sells and how she emotes. That's all there, no question. But I think bigger picture is I think she's going to be a player. And to me, Joel, she's going to win this tournament in a couple weeks.
Yeah, I think there's a very high likelihood that we're going to see Ruby Soho as the first TBS champion. You know, I see all the things that you guys are saying about this match. You know, I didn't think it was one of the best matches that we've seen in this tournament, but definitely, you know, not a bad match by any means. You know, and Ruby Soho has definitely proven herself, you know, through her debut, having a really big reaction at All Out, and just sustaining you know, having the people behind her and proving herself that she is a really quality wrestler. And so I think that this makes for a good logical story to make her that first champion who can be that workhorse that you mentioned, Zach, because Jade Cargill is just not, you know, at that stage right now. She's more of kind of the monster who's going to do squash matches. And sure, you could do that with the TBS championship. But, you know, I think that they're looking for someone who's going to be able to consistently have really good matches on TV. And I think that Ruby Soho has proven herself that she's ready to take on that mantle.
Yeah, well said. Alex, back to you. Any other thoughts on tonight's show?
Yeah, sure. Have you guys had a chance to talk about the Owen Hart tribute video as of yet?
We haven't. It's a great topic. I'm glad we're getting into it here. I have it in my notes to make sure we touch on. Alex, what did you think of it?
I loved it. I got a little bit emotional during it, to be quite honest with you. I watched, you know, Owen perform with, you know, the New Heart Foundation and even before that, and even as, like, you know, with High Energy and Coco Beware and all that stuff. So, you know, I enjoyed him quite a bit. So I thought they did a very nice, respectful, beautiful job of just kind of discussing his legacy and using the footage that they had available to them in a very, I don't want to use the word crafty, but sure, I'll use the word crafty way to kind of just really make Owen feel like a very important person in the history of professional wrestling and someone who has touched a lot of lives, you know, people who were around when he was wrestling and who got to work with him, as well as people who just, you know, grew up watching him. And I thought it was just really nice to see the behind the scenes, the personal stuff of, you know, pictures of his family and video of himself and stuff like that, just outside of the ring, and to see the stuff from New Japan. It was just all around a great thing. And I wanted to make sure that I mentioned it as well, because there was so much that happened on this show, and I felt like they were just like throwing one thing after another. And honestly, like, sometimes when they do that, a lot of stuff gets lost in the shuffle, or I feel it's too much. but I don't know what it is. This week I'm kind of in the Christmas spirit, so I was just like, yeah, just keep giving me presents, basically. That's kind of what it felt like when I was watching the show. Yeah. When I was watching the show tonight, even the stuff that's like when they were even when they were talking about like what's coming up on Rampage this week, you know, and what's coming up next week on Dynamite, and what's coming up at Battle of the Belts, like all these announcements coming up for like the next 2-3 weeks of shows, just keeping me satiated as a fan and excited for like what's coming up next. And all the stuff that they've announced was really cool. And the Owen tournament is one of the things that, you know, it's happening in May and they're already making a big deal of it and making it feel important. So yeah, I loved it. What it boils down to, just
I really liked it too.
The video package.
Yeah, I liked it too. I thought it was really well done. Touching. I think it was emotional. And also, you know, it because of the circumstances with Owen Hart's death and like just the circumstances and the you know, combative nature between, you know, his family and WWE, like you just don't see this kind of, you know, memorial tribute package that often because it's touchy between both of those sides. Mm-hmm. And to see one here, it just felt nice. It's like, okay, man, yes. Like it felt nice to see, you know, some of his legacy and see some of the Japan stuff and kind of hear people talk about him, because, you know, WWE just avoids that because they kind of have to. And it just was nice, Joel, to kind of get that out in the open and kind of have like what I think is going to be the first of many, you know, tribute and references to Owen Hart. I mean, that's a good thing for wrestling.
Yeah, I think it really feels good to see, you know, Owen Hart be honored in this way, like, because we just haven't been able to see that because of what you mentioned, the relationship between Owen's widow and WWE. And, you know, as someone who, I didn't grow up watching Owen Hart, you know, I don't have that personal connection that a lot of people do, you know, watching him, you know, from WrestleMania 10 and New Japan, all the way through, you know, the later years in WWF. But, you know, I certainly have done my research on Owen Hart. I've seen his past matches, but I think that this tribute really, you know, if you didn't grow up with him, I think it really gives you a good sense of like that connection that people had that made him really special, that he wasn't just a really good wrestler or, you know, this just this really flashy character, that he was really somebody who was special to a lot of people. And so I think that this video did a really great job of conveying that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do too. And I'm looking forward to this tournament. I, you know, we don't know yet who's going to be in it or, you know, how big it's going to be, but I think, you know, all signs point to it being a significant part of AEW's spring, you know, and maybe even late winter. So, I think it's going to be pretty significant, you know, because I don't think you're going to go into this and, you know, go halfway. Like this is, if you're going to put you know, Owen Hart's name on something, I think you have to make it a big deal, and all indications that they will. Go ahead.
And I'd really like to see Brett involved in this at some point.
Oh yeah, that'd be icing on the cake. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Alex, thanks for bringing that up. Great topic. Anything else for us tonight before we jump to another call?
No, honestly, I could go segment by segment with you guys, but I'm sure you have other callers lined up. So thank you so much, and wish you both, you know, the best during the holiday season. And if I don't call in next week, just happy New Year to you too.
You too, Alex. Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Thanks for the call. Great stuff. Let's keep it rolling here, Joe. We'll go to 814 next. 814, you are up. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from tonight.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hey, Ryan, great to hear from you, man. It's been a bit. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
It was a good show. I have some questions about the show. The first is about the Daniel Bryan promo with the judges. Do you think it's possible they might redo the Sting-Ric Flair finish where one of the judges, or it was actually a few of the judges, do like a non-decision? So maybe they could have like one judge, you know, go with Bryan and the other one with Adam, and then, you know, that everyone be non-decisive, so this will continue. You know,
yeah, man. Oh, man. Yeah, I mean, look, here's the thing. Like, Tony Khan, you know, he knows his history, and he likes that history. He likes, you know, playing into it and remembering it. I think that's obvious, you know, now in terms of how he – just what he's done and with Dynamite and how he books his shows, and, you know, et cetera, countless examples. But, Joel, I hope they don't do that.
Yeah. I think that Paige needs to have a decisive win over Danielson, you know, and the judges shouldn't play a factor. I think that should just be kind of a nice appearance that you see, you know, three legends. I'm assuming it's going to be three on TV. And then at the end of the match, they clap for Paige.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's how this has to go. I mean, like, look, you know, Paige came out, showed a little doubt. I've said my piece on that. But at the end of the promo, he also, you know, put it out there. Like, this is what I'm going to do. You know, I'm not going to let it go 60 this time. And I was seconds away last time. This time I'm drowning you, and I'm going to get the win. And it's like, as a babyface, you got to make good. And I think the Adam Page character absolutely has to make good, more so than other babyfaces, just given the character. And so if you're going to have this kind of like nuanced story of him finding himself and doubting himself and the ups and downs of that, okay. But now he's put it on the line, you know, and you can't, cause you can't go back from it. You can't go back from him saying he's going to do this and then not doing it. And then there he's sitting with the belt still perhaps. And it's like, okay, what there's no progress here. Ryan, I mean, like I said, Tony knows his history. I think it's clever that you went there for sure, but I don't see it happening that way. I think that would be damaging to Adam Page. Joel, any other comments on that?
No, I mean that's what I was going to say too, is that, you know, I would have hoped he'd have a little bit more fire coming out of his win over Kenny Omega, but I think you're really starting to do damage to him if you have some sort of weird finish like that. You know, if it goes to the judges or anything of that nature.
Yeah, for sure. Ryan, anything else, man?
I have a question on that first match with Kyle O'Reilly debuting. Is there a timetable when it might be possible that Roderick Strong could make a surprise appearance to reform the Undisputed Era?
So I believe, and Joel, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think Strong is still signed with WWE for quite some time.
Like I think another year or so.
Yeah. So if it does happen, Ryan, I don't think it's going to be imminent. You know, I think it's way further down the road. Certainly wouldn't rule it out at that point once Roderick Strong is out of, you know, his contract with WWE, just because of kind of where that NXT brand is going at this point. He's kind of, you know, he's feeling more and more like an odd man out on that show week to week. But, you know, contract's a contract. And I, you know, unless he gets, you know, released, I think he's going to be with NXT for a while, but Joel, hey, you know, could he come over and join that group? Yes. I guess my thought is, though, by that time, if it's a year, let's say, you know, I think they're already going to have told this, you know, Elite versus Undisputed Era story at that point. So I think he's going to miss that window.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of my thoughts, too, is I think that they're kind of in motion of telling the story with Kyle O'Reilly coming in here, you know, after Bobby Fish. And so, I mean, definitely Roderick Strong is kind of dead in the water, you know, being in WWE, that there's no future there, you know, other than just being in NXT and, you know, having good matches when he's paired against, you know, competent wrestlers. So, I mean, once his contract's up, I mean, definitely, I mean, AEW is going to be a viable option. And we know Tony Khan, he's definitely going to throw that guy an offer.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and so Ryan, yeah, I don't know how much you'll be able to actually play into, you know, this kind of program that we're going to see, or the story, or, you know, whatever feud, whatever you want to call it. I think he's going to miss that, but him in AEW, absolutely, I think that's a possibility. Back to you, Ryan.
Yeah, final questions on Sting. Based on his performance tonight, how much longer do you think he can good, like when you think of like a retirement match might happen.
You know, honestly, Ryan, based on his performance tonight, I mean, I think he could do this, you know, I don't know, Joel, a lot more times. I don't even want to put a number on it. I mean, look, he's out there kind of doing the Sting greatest hits. And that, I mean, I think that's all that you can really expect of him. I don't think you're going to put him in a, like, you know, really even maybe even a one-on-one match at this point. That I think that's too much for him. But doing what he did in this match, I think he can do that, you know, a couple times a year, once, you know, even if it's just on pay-per-view or on big TV shows. I think you can roll this Sting out and do this. And I think, he does this well. Don't ask him to do much more, because I think that's irresponsible, number one. Number two, not great for his health. And number three, just I don't think will look all that great. But Joel, in this situation, with the talent around him like he had tonight and really in all of his matches, like this thing he can be this guy. And I think as long as it's not more than this, that's fine.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, he looked pretty stiff tonight. I mean, but that's, you know, nothing out of the usual. I mean, I just don't want to see Sting take any of those really, like, bad big bumps. I mean, there was a while ago where I can't remember who it was, but, like, somebody powerbombed him. It might have been, like, Wardlow. I can't remember who. But, that was scary. I mean, to see Sting kind of, like, land on his neck and the back of his head with all of his history. So, I mean, I don't want to see, like, any big things like that. But as far as kind of being thrown into the mix of a tag or a six-man tag, and he just kind of goes in there, he does the Stinger Splash and the Scorpion Deathlock. I mean, sure, yeah, let's bring it on. I think that you can continue to do this for a while, at least going with Darby Allin, you know, obviously with CM Punk, gives it a whole nother life too. So I think that he's capable of doing this version of it for a while, but I really don't want to see him doing anything really more than that.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. And to Ryan, though, to your point, and Joel, I want to get your thoughts on this. I mean, you have, you know, in your hand some equity if you're Tony Khan, and it is Sting's retirement match. Like, it's his promoted last match. I mean, I think you're going to want to play that card at some point. I mean, it's a big deal. Sting's an icon of the business, you know, regardless of what you think of him as a worker. I mean, he's a big time star that's been around for a long time. Do you go that route, Joel, if you're Tony Khan at some point? Like, do you get all you can out of Sting and then, you know, put him in some sort of, like, I don't know, some sort of Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania kind of send off type thing?
I mean, I could see it, and I feel like in theory, like just talking about it, yeah, that sounds really cool to do something like that, because I think that could be a really big deal. But I just default back on what I said before, that I really don't want to see him doing more than just kind of, you know, getting in his offense and really taking just minimal bumps.
Yeah.
I think maybe you could do something in a tag match and say this is kind of the final send-off for Sting, you know, go to Baltimore, do something cool like that. You know, but I just, man, I just don't want to see Sting in a singles match really taking any more damage on his way out.
Yep, fair enough. Fair enough. Ryan, back to you, man.
I think it might have been Brian Cage that did the powerbomb. I'm not positive on that. So that was a team.
Yeah,
that
was Brian Cage.
Yep.
Good memory.
That's all I have for you. Thanks for taking the call.
All right. Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Have a great holiday, man. Appreciate you making the call.
You too.
All right, Joel, let's jump into a couple emails here. I think we are going to be going to an on-site correspondent at some point, and the Rampage taping should have wrapped at some relatively, you know, not that long ago. So hopefully we get to our on-site correspondent here in a second. But in the meantime, let's get to a batch of emails here, because I think there's some good ones. First one is from JB in Detroit, and he goes, with Kyle O'Reilly debuting tonight, what do you think are the immediate and future prospects for the former Undisputed Era in AEW? Will they coexist with the Elite, or will they split from and feud with the Elite? Could this finally be the true impetus for the trio's titles? Love the show, and go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP. JB, thanks very much. Yeah, so Joel, we talked about, I think, in pretty extensive detail, like the roadmap here for the new Undisputed Era in AEW. Like, they've got the Elite. They started telling that story. So take this thing a couple different directions. Number one, where do they go after that? I mean, is this like, do you want to saddle Adam Cole, you know, as the leader of this Undisputed Era group for his entire tenure in AEW, or at least long term? Or is it kind of like, been there, done that, let's do this feud here because it's money, and then let's move on? Like, what is too much Undisputed Era for Adam Cole? Because at some point, you want that guy to be a signature singles top star for your company, I'd imagine, and not just trot him out there to do the Undisputed Era greatest hits.
Yeah, I mean, I think that right now, I mean, they're going to do kind of a slow burn. I don't think that they're immediately going to go to the Bucks going, hey, you know, like, and then just going into this big feud between the both of them. I think ultimately that's going to be, you know, their destination. Obviously, when Kenny Omega comes back, I think that, you know, eventually we're going to see Adam Cole versus Kenny Omega, and that's going to be a really big match whenever that happens. But I think that there's just going to be uneasiness, you know, as they, you know, appear in backstage promos. I'm sure Adam Cole's going to be taking the lead, and he's going to kind of be, you know, keeping the group together while the Young Bucks are just kind of unsure as far as where this whole thing's going to go. But I mean, there's big money to be made as far as an Young Bucks versus Red Dragon, and then also doing the Adam Cole versus Kenny Omega. So I think this is going to play out over the next few months. But, you know, Cole, I think, is going to be, you know, at least loosely affiliated with those guys for a while. I think it's going to be, you know, many months before we see any sort of departure, you know, from him and O'Reilly and Fish.
What did you think of Adam Cole tonight as this all played out? Because, you know, as we were talking about earlier in the show, the angle was rooted in him, like his reaction to the Young Bucks, his reaction back to his Undisputed Era guys. So what do you kind of make of him just walking off and kind of saying, I'm not dealing with this right now? I mean, how did you read, you know, his character in that moment?
Yeah, no, I think he's going to play it off like, hey guys, I'm not going to get involved. You know, this is between you guys. I don't know. I'm just kind of bringing in my friends here. But I think ultimately, you know, he has more nefarious plans, you know, where he's bringing in his guys to really take over, where the Elite were the ones who were, you know, kind of running AEW when Omega and the Bucks were all champions. And now I think Cole is kind of has his eyes on doing the same thing, but for him, with Fish and O'Reilly.
Yeah, I think that's the exact sense I got too. Like, looking long term, okay, you know, what is Adam Cole going to be? I mean, he can work as a babyface for sure, but I think he's much more natural and authentic as a heel. And so, to do that, you know, you're going to have to, you know, position him as a heel opposite the Elite when they do this. And so, I'm curious to how this plays out. To be honest, Joel, I wasn't expecting like a walkout the way that he did, like just kind of like not really reacting too much to either side, but recognizing that he's in the middle, you know, and kind of showing that with his face, but then walking off. So I'm curious as to the follow up on that, because like, is it going to be, hey, I'm Adam Cole, you know, I'm bigger than both these groups anyway. Is he going to try to be, you know, the connective tissue between both sides? Like, you can take this thing a lot of different directions. And so I think he did a nice job tonight of setting that hook, right? And
yeah,
now they can build off it.
Well, I think it definitely sets it up as, you know, one of the most, if not the most intriguing stories in AEW going forward. You know, some of the other stuff we've talked about has some flaws, and, you know, the Punk and MJF stuff is also really exciting. But I think that whatever happens here with Adam Cole in the middle is actually, you know, one of the most intriguing things going forward.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. Let me ask you this then, Joe, while we're on this topic. So if you're booking this feud, Elite versus, I'm going to say Undisputed Era just because that's what everybody knows. I'm sure they can't call them that. But when you look at that feud and the prospects of how long it can go and where it can go, Kenny Omega's not there right now. So you could, you know, you're probably not going to let go on this thing until you know when he's going to come back. But is this something that you want to build, like, okay, you have Elite versus Undisputed Era, or are you using this as a means to get to Adam Cole versus Kenny Omega one-on-one?
Well, I think that both of them are eventually going to happen, but I think that right now that they're just going to coexist as a team, and then I think that once Kenny Omega comes back, whenever that is, I know that he's talked about possibly February being that time, then I think that's when stuff is really going to start to shake up, because Kenny Omega is going to want to be the alpha of that group. And, you know, they could take it in any which directions. I mean, maybe Kenny Omega wants to take a back seat when he comes back. You know, maybe he's really upset with all the things that have happened here. But I think ultimately your final destination is going to be between Omega and Adam Cole. And I could see that going, you know, as far out as, you know, All Out.
Right. Yep. That's what I think too. I mean, I think this is going to be a long story, and I look at All Out as like, you know, that's when they can do this thing, you know, with Kenny Omega and Cole, and maybe a Double or Nothing is when you do maybe a six-man tag between both teams. So this is an exciting development. I have that just piece in my brain that goes, okay, but just, you know, you got, for this to be effective, and I think for this to mean the most that it can mean for the company in terms of attracting potentially new fans and also making money, like, this has to be serious stuff. Like, I don't want to see, like, you know, Young Bucks like fooling around and Undisputed Era fooling around with this. Like, you got to leave that quirkiness at the door. This is a big time match and a big time feud, and one that, you know, a year ago nobody thought was ever going to happen anytime soon. So I think you really need to put the white gloves on and tend to this thing, because it's a big deal, and it can be a very big deal if it's written the right way and taken down the right path. Comedy, I think, ruins this, Joel.
Yeah, I think that Tony Khan needs to curate this thing to a point where we're not seeing, you know, Cookie Monster shirt and Ghostbusters and all those kinds of things. I think we need to take this seriously, because this could be a huge, big money match for them, you know, down the road. But I think that if you start going down the route of like, well, it's all kind of for fun, we're all just kind of having a good time with this, you know, that's just going to water down the whole thing, because this can be really something big, you know, depending on how they tell this story. But I mean, if everybody comes back and takes it really seriously, if Kenny Omega comes back and he's like, you know, I'm ready to be number one again, instead of taking a back seat, I think that, you know, this could be really the big talk of, you know, all of wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We'll go to, Chris from Reading, Pennsylvania. What do you think about AEW attracting some bigoted fans at shows? A fan a few weeks ago yelled a slur at Anthony Bowens, and now on Dynamite this week, another quote-unquote fan had a horrible sign aimed at Nyla Rose that was transphobic. What responsibility does AEW have to throw out and ban these people? How should they let people know that this is not acceptable? I'm not comfortable bringing anyone to shows until we all feel safe and invited. Chris from Reading, Pennsylvania. Chris, thanks very much for the email, man. Yeah, Joel, we touched on this. It really was an awful sign tonight. Mm-hmm. And I want to see AEW come down on that guy in the hardest way possible. Whatever they can do, like, they should do. And I think they should be public about it, you know, and tell the world that, hey, this is not what's going to happen at our shows. This is period. And if you're going to try it, this is what's going to happen, because this is what happened to that guy. And I just think that's how you want to approach this. I think you want to be public about it, not to attract attention, but to show that, hey, like, this is not us and this is not happening at these shows.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, there's, you know, pieces of scum in all walks of life. You know, any entertainment thing you go to, there's, you know, not to this degree, you know, I haven't seen that, But you're going to see jerks all over the place. I mean, you go to an NBA game. I mean, we've seen it where guys, people are throwing popcorn at players. They're saying just awful things while they're sitting on the bench, all sorts of things like that. But I agree with you in the response that this needs to be a press release that gets sent out and it's signed by Tony Khan, you know, that this specific person, you know, has been banned for life. And they also need to set a precedent that, you know, that this, if this kind of stuff does happen in the future, you know, with other fans, that, you know, they will be met with the same consequences.
Yeah, exactly. That's well said. I mean, yeah, you can't vet everybody that's going to be coming to these shows, but what you can do is control how you communicate afterwards and set that precedent right away. And so, yeah, press release, you know, something like that. I think it's necessary here. It just was awful, Joel. I mean, it really kind of just left an awful taste. It's like, you're like, really? Like, that's just terrible stuff. So I hope we see that tomorrow morning.
And it's just, what is the goal of these people, you know, other than just being an asshole? I mean, what are you really accomplishing? Cause I mean, you know, even if you're an AEW fan, I mean, all you did was get yourself probably banned for life. I'm assuming that's probably what happened to them. And it's like, just for what? To be a jerk. I don't understand that stuff.
Yeah, no, I don't either. I don't either. We're probably, you know, giving him too much time that he deserves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So with that said, let's move on. We'll go to James in Clemson. He goes, I think I've convinced myself that Cody is winning on Friday. The way Dan Lambert aimed his – you never know. Or some people know right now, but
I suppose, yeah.
We're not going to spoil that on this show, that's for sure. But James says, the way Dan Lambert aimed his promo at Cody and not Sammy was a tell to me. Is a Cody victory a good or bad idea? To me, it feels like a Cody victory would just be his latest attempt at getting cheered, and I don't think it's going to work. Thank you, James. Yeah, so I disagree with that last sentence here.
Yeah.
You know, like I think a Cody victory
leans into booze.
Right, exactly. I think it tells people, hey, boo me now, without, you know, saying that, you know, or without, like, you know, actually turning heel, like, right? Like, I mean, to me, that totally pushes people in that direction. I mean, I don't know how you can be like that tone deaf to at this point actually think, okay, hey, we got to give Cody this win because that'll be the thing that gets him cheered. I mean, there's no chance. There's no chance that a win accomplishes that goal, Joel. So if they go that route, to me, it smells like, okay, now he's going to be this bad guy now. Like that's what a Cody victory would tell me. So I think if you stay in babyface, Sammy's winning. That's my opinion, Joel.
Yeah, I know that Cody is aware of this situation. You know, he is not oblivious. I mean, he may be very stubborn to want to be turned heel. But he is totally aware of what's going on in the situation with this. But I don't think that at all a Cody winning the TNT championship against Sammy would get him cheered. I think that would very much be leaning into the booze, and that would pretty much be solidly saying going forward that maybe he didn't overtly turn heel, but he's going to be positioned as someone who's going to get booed because now they're just pretty much inviting that to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so Cody to turn heel and not, like, turn heel.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's right up Cody's alley. And I honestly think that's where we're headed, like, on this. And so whether or not Cody victory is a good or bad idea, I think it totally depends on where he's going after this. I mean, it's a bad idea for Cody to win this match and stay where he is right now, which is this kind of babyface that's not a baby face, that the fans are booing, but that, like, they're not really being encouraged to boo. That, I think, would make for a mess, really even more of a mess than he's already in. If the victory is to launch this heel run of his, if he wins with underhanded tactics or he cheats, like, and he gets that victory, that, like I said, puts the heel Cody character on track, then I think you have something. And then I think you can make an argument, a good argument for having him go over. Because, look, Cody's – he is an important star. And the only reason he isn't an doesn't feel like an important star right now is because he's mixed up in this nonsense. And he's trying to just walk that line and, you know, do stuff that's real. And I don't want to turn heel, but I'm going to fake go down the heel tunnel. Like, it's just – he's just – too cute right now, and he's distanced himself from the key narratives of AEW, which is fighting for championships, fighting for titles. And but if you position him better and you put him in a heel role at this point, he can be a big star for your company. He can be a top opponent for Adam Page as a heel. Cody breaking that promise and going after that title when he said he wouldn't. I mean, that's ultimate heel stuff, Joel, and I think you have that waiting for you. So if this victory is a catalyst to that, then, you know, I'm for that. I want to see that play out. If it's not, though, it's just pouring gasoline on the fire they have.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a good Christmas gift to see, you know, something moving in that direction. You know, I think that they're going to have to get crafty if that's what they're doing with Cody. If they're going to position him more as a heel without having the overt turn, because right now, I mean, he's just kind of, I mean, it just feels like whatever he does just is overshadowed by this whole story of him getting booed by people. I mean, his whole thing that he had with Pac and Andrade, I mean, just the whole story of it was just Cody getting booed. I mean, that was really it. And so I just don't think that he's capable right now of being a part of any program in any serious capacity without actually addressing the elephant in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, so Joel, like real quick, Cody wasn't on the show tonight, but it's a topic that we spent some time on here. I mean, do you have an idea of where this goes? Like, where do you see this going with him? I mean, you're kind of on it seems like you're in my camp of like he knows what's happening out there. He's playing into it. He's turning heel by not turning heel, which again is like the ultimate Cody move. But where does this end in your eyes? I mean, how long can he go this way without having that definitive moment?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had a better answer, but I just feel that he is such like a stubborn person. You know, I mean, but sure, there's all the thoughts out there and theories of maybe this is something that's playing into the reality TV show that he has, and the culmination of it is that he actually turns heel, and this was all ploy all along. But I mean, right now, I just think that you know, that they're probably trying to recalibrate some things. You know, they probably had a roadmap for him, you know, when he was doing this stuff with Andrade and Pac and Malakai, obviously, you know, was the one that kind of changed the whole thing for Cody. But I think that they don't know exactly what all that looks like for Cody, because I mean, the thing that they don't want to happen is that they do a big heel turn for Cody and then everyone just starts cheering him. You know, and then it flips that way. And so that's why I said they're going to really have to get creative in the way that they do it. And so I think that maybe that is the move, is that you have Cody, you know, win the TNT. I mean, the match has already happened, so I don't know. But maybe you do have him win the TNT championship. And like you said, he's using underhanded tactics, but he's still playing the babyface role, but he's just slowly kind of doing other things that are kind of heelish, that eventually kind of leads to that bigger heel turn. I think that there's a scenario in which that could work.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where I'm at too. You know, I think they have to pull the trigger though. I mean, it's getting pretty ridiculous. And I just think you have this star there that you want to just use more, you know? I mean, he's still a top name. But he just has to be positioned in a way that he can act like it. And
you need him right now. You need him. Without Moxley, without Kenny, like, you need this guy to be elevated into a bigger position, and especially as a heel. I mean, they could use, you know, big-time heels right now.
Absolutely. Yep, that's a great point. I mean, like I said, Adam Page needs opponents. He needs top heel opponents, you know? And, you know, look, I mean, Adam Page-Cody match – at All Out with Cody as a heel, I mean, that's money, I think. I think people would would pay to see that match, especially if they, you know, really get Adam Page going as a babyface. I think that would play nicely. But you gotta pick a lane at some point. So
yeah,
we will see. All right, we are going to go to our. Or I thought we were going to go to our onsite correspondent, but that person just dropped off. So, oh no, they're back. Okay. Familiar face on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and podcasts. Johnny Fairplay, is this you?
Yeah, it is.
Great to talk to you, man. Thanks for calling.
Sorry, I'm walking out of the Greensboro Coliseum as we speak.
That's fantastic. Fantastic. Real quick, Johnny, we're going to try to not talk the Rampage tapings just to avoid spoilers, okay?
Are we after? Because, like, that was the big stuff.
Yes, no. Yes, after we can, for sure. No doubt. Yep.
Well, no. I just want to make sure. Just say, like, don't listen after this or wait, fight, like,
yeah
the
right.
Rampage stuff was bigger. Okay, cool. Well, let's start with that Dynamite. What do you want to know?
Yeah, we'll start with Dynamite, man. I guess the first thing I want to know is we spent a lot of time talking about the Adam Page, Bryan Danielson segment. The crowd seemed like hot-ish, but maybe not like piping hot. What was going on in the building there? Were people firmly on the side of Adam Page? Because, you know, the mics didn't pick up like a relentless excitement for him.
No, so I went to the Dynamite show in Charlotte right after they started running again, and that was like going to WCW Nitro back in the day. I mean, like, there were people like screaming the whole time, like people were taking their shirts off. I mean, it was crazy. It was Nitro-esque. Like, I was so happy. And then this one was like a WWE show. Like, it was a lot more families. I'm thinking a lot of people have Christmas break started, so it's a lot of kids that normally wouldn't be able to go out on a Wednesday night or going out tonight. So it was more family friendly, crowd wise, and so they were just polite. It was a very polite audience. Like, they weren't they wanted Hook. There were six Hook chants.
wow.
But no, they were like a
give
no,
that Hook.
Bryan Danielson, he got the yes chant when he came out, but he got heat after that. They liked Adam Page.
Okay. Well, good. Yeah. Cause we were
just a polite crowd. Like, it's very odd. I mean, like, as I said, I felt like I was at a WWE show, and I'm just like, but it was just a lot more kids in Greensboro than it was in Charlotte.
So with that said, so who was the most over? Was it like, you know, Darby Allin, CM Punk? I mean, who got the biggest
CM Punk? CM Punk number one, no contest.
Okay. Wow.
And what about Sting?
Sting was right behind him, but Punk was number one.
Okay. How did people receive Kyle O'Reilly? Did the, you know, with it being a family-friendly crowd, I mean, did everybody seem to know who he was or
there,
not?
There was a really loud Undisputed chant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Did the angle get
that
over?
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, we wanted more. We went, like, you know, people were yelling for a pole on a pole match.
Oh my goodness. Oh, Greensboro.
I do not want a pole on a pole match.
Yes, I was going to say, Johnny, did you start that chant or?
I did not, nor did I endorse it. I'm ashamed that I repeated it.
Fair enough. Joel, I'll toss to you for a couple questions.
Yeah, so I want to follow up on that too. So Johnny, you know, what percentage would you say actually knew who Kyle O'Reilly was? You said that there was a big, Undisputed Era champ, but like, was it like 80% of the people knew? Was it like closer to 90%? Was it 70%? What was that like?
I think 80 is probably a pretty good guess. So okay. I felt like everyone there just watched wrestling. So, as I said, it seemed like a lot of WWEers or WWEers there. So more like Dynamite in Charlotte was AEW fans. It was a completely different atmosphere.
I just think
it's because Christmas break started and you know, it's the, you know, kids don't have school tomorrow and they're like, you know, here's your Christmas. We're going to Rasmus,
yeah.
Greensboro Coliseum.
Yeah. No, I think that's really interesting because, you know, I would think that that's, you know, an audience that AEW wants to covet, you know, clearly. So it's interesting
if I'm Tony Khan, I would rather have that than yelling shut the F up on my cable channel.
Yeah. Go ahead, Joel. Sorry, I didn't mean to take the mic for you there.
No. So what was the crowd reaction to the Ruby Soho Nyla Rose match? Were they really into that? You know, just kind of
no.
Walk us through that.
It was let's go Nyla. Nyla sucks. There wasn't much of a Ruby chant. So they popped at the end, but yeah, not much to it.
Yeah,
so it was a good match.
Yeah, we thought it was a good match too.
I think a lot of people were, like, we got there right before Dynamite. A lot of people got, because the ticket said 6 o'clock, and people were talking, and they're like, the ticket said 6 o'clock. And, I mean, so they suffered through, you know, YouTube stuff.
Yeah. An hour of squashes.
Yeah.
So, Johnny, you mentioned that they're a polite crowd. So who got the biggest heat? Like, who drew the biggest negative reaction of
no
the night?
Among,
oh.
they hated it.
Figured. Where were your seats tonight?
I was second row right after ringside.
Okay. So did you see that MJF bump where he kind of landed almost what looked to be directly on his head? Did they tend to him at all, or did he just kind of pop right back up? Because it looked nasty on TV.
The Sting high spot?
No, the one right before that, where Sting throws MJF over the top rope and out of the ring FTR.
Yeah, that was right towards our side. So, yeah,
oh, wow.
I mean, I don't.
It looked awkward.
It looked awkward, but it didn't look like it was like he was hurt or anything. So the best sell job was probably Ruby Soho going to the back was probably the best sell job.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good because it looked really bad on TV. So good to know that he's okay. Joel, back to you. Any other questions for Johnny about Dynamite?
Yeah. So I just want to ask about Malakai Black as well. So, I mean, like, I've been to a couple events recently, and he tends to get one of the bigger pops on the show. But now he's kind of involved in, you know, a little bit lower level of a feud as they build him back up for something else big. But, you know, what was the reaction to Malakai Black? Was he still kind of among one of the bigger pops, or was he more kind of getting boos as a heel?
Yeah, what's this about, Garrison?
Malakai Black, was that against Griff Garrison. Yep.
Griff Garrison. I think he's from Greensboro. So, because like on the local news yesterday, they featured Garrison, and then there was several signs. There were many signs in the crowd for him, and then there was a welcome home Garrison, and so I think he's from here, so that helps as far as, you know, potentially being viewed as a lower tier opponent on television locally. It like they were for the hometown guy, but Malakai Black is something special. Like the entrance is special, and he's you know, kind of mysterious, you know, special character. So I think it worked. I think he's still in that still can be in that upper tier if pushed correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. All right, anything else, Joel, before we get into the Rampage stuff? Because I'm real excited to talk about that.
No, I'm very curious about that. I'm very curious about Rampage.
Oh, well, real quick.
Okay, very good. So
there,
if you're listening to the show right now,
fast
forward a little bit,
audience. The lower bowl was completely full, and then there were a few rows in the upper bowl. So really good turnout for a Wednesday night wrestling show.
I was going to ask, I mean, is that comparable to what other, you know, shows have done in that arena, or is that like behind the pace of like a WWE show?
It's like a Monday Night Raw would do that.
Okay. All right, very good. Yeah, Johnny, anything, I don't want to cut you off. Anything else notable about Dynamite tonight?
Anything notable about Dynamite, guys? No, it's all Rampage.
All right,
it's Hook. Well,
let's do it. If you're listening to the show, fast forward about 10 minutes, and so you can avoid your Rampage spoilers here. But with that said, Johnny, like, what's the lead A topic coming out of the Rampage tapings?
Let me preface it with no one left. Everyone stayed for Rampage, so that was
wow.
A pretty amazing sign. So, because I've been to plenty of SmackDowns with 205 following, and oh my God, you want front row? It's not a problem. the big story coming out of Rampage is they love Hook.
Wow.
Six.
Of course
Hook
they
chance.
Do.
We had. We won Hook. We had send Hook. The show ended with Cody's celebration. Tony Khan brings out David Crockett, and before he leaves, he says, "Wait a second! I know you guys want it. Let's hear it." And they started. Tony Khan led the chant of send Hook, and Hook came out.
Wow!
Stood face to face with Cody Rhodes. They shook hands, and then Hook slapped him. And Cody said, "We could have a match right now." Yes, we could have a match right
amazing.
Now, but let's save it for next time we're at the Greensboro Coliseum. It doesn't matter where we are in our careers. Let's have Hook versus Cody Rhodes next time in Greensboro.
Wow, that
makes Cody the heel.
Cody won, and afterwards he goes, "Oh, what's with my foot?" So there's no. No on-camera interview after he wins the belt. So, he wins the belt. But David Crockett presents
wow.
him with the championship, and then they clear the cameras out, and then he cuts the promo. He goes, "What's my foot? I feel like my heel's bothering me."
Oh my God! First, go back to Hook real quick, Johnny. Like, I want to ask, is this? Talk about like the level of overness, because there's one thing to like chant for somebody. I mean, is this Rusev Day, or is this somebody that is really organically
like
getting over in a big way? Yeah, is it like a Fandango thing, or is it like a fad character, or is this somebody that you sense is like genuinely building a groundswell for himself?
I feel it's a combination. I feel it's part Rusev Day, but I feel like the gimmick is they just let him stiff the crap out of jobbers, and if that's the deal, everyone likes that. I mean, because he, like, beat the crap out of the Bear Country dude. I mean, just stiffed him I mean, it was pretty – like, well, Bear Country beat him up for a little bit, and then it was just, okay, here's Hook here to stiff you. So
yeah.
I don't get over. I mean, who doesn't want to see that?
Yeah.
I mean, you could build Hook as kind of like, like the Logan, one of the Paul brothers, kind of do one of those things where they kind of, face some tomato cans and they look good against them, but, they haven't faced any real competition to this point.
Yeah. No, this is going to be a really interesting thing to watch because, clearly he has momentum. It's just, is it the real kind that you can make money with as a big star? I mean, obviously time will tell, but it's, you certainly would rather be getting the cheers than not. And not everybody gets to slap Cody on television, Johnny.
Well, that wasn't on TV. That was after
went
dark. Yeah. That was after. And that's when Tony Khan came out, and Tony Khan brought – he goes, "This is the one guy you want back out here. Let me get him. Send Hook." So now I guess that's how they're ending shows now. So, and then Cody did a shout-out to a special friend in Section 108, and it was super babyface, charity work Cody, and it's just like – and so – you know, everybody cheered for the guy, but we weren't happy with Cody. I mean, cause it's like the show is airing on Christmas night. It's the Greensboro Coliseum. How many memories did his dad make in that building?
Oh, countless. Yeah,
so,
I mean,
we wanted the big Cody, and Cody went in the TNT title. I mean, he won it pretty nefariously. I mean, Sammy went for the 450 or whatever off the top. Cody put his knees up, pulled him in for a crossroads, spun it around to a second crossroads, went for a third crossroads, stopped, went for the pedigree, and then turned it into like a sit-out powerbomb.
Oh my goodness! Wow. So
and it
so
was heel
the reaction
heat.
To him. I was going to ask. It was all heat all the way.
All heat. I mean, like every time they mentioned his name all night, people booed. He came out there, people booed. There was a "Let's go, Sammy, Cody sucks" chant. So it later morphed into a "Let's go, Cody, Cody sucks" chant. But the same people chanting "Let's go, Cody" were also chanting "Cody sucks." I'm like, so that doesn't count.
He's a heel.
They hate him.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, what was the reaction to Sammy Guevara, like, as a player in this? Because it sounds like it was like heavy Cody focus, but you got Sammy there, who's the champion. I mean, was he over?
He was over. He's flashy, so it's a great match. So I think it was my favorite match of the night. Hold on, what about you guys?
Hands down, the car
is unanimous.
Okay, well I think that's saying something, because I thought you guys got a good match. The six man tag Dynamite was good. Cole versus Cassidy was good too. So to say that this trumped both of those, I mean that puts it pretty high up there. Yeah. What else
and
about
as I said,
Rampage?
Nobody left, which I thought was that was crazy. Nobody left.
Yeah, I mean that is crazy. I mean, was it the Cody factor or was it Hook?
Chappy Hook.
I don't know. I mean, as I said, six Hook chance. Six.
Wild. Wild stuff. Wild stuff. Johnny, man, thanks. Is there anything else from Rampage that you want to talk about? Because obviously we haven't seen the show, so we'll kind of take your lead on all the notable news.
Let's see. It was Jungle Boy versus one of the Hardy family group.
Yeah, Isaiah Cassidy. Yep.
Yeah, that was good. And there was Chris Statlander against the shorter girl and shorter woman. And so
Layla Hirsch.
That match was okay. Layla Hirsch, yeah. And then, one of the highlights was, so when Punk came in for the hot tag and the six-man tag, he was trying to do his springboard thing off the top, but he didn't. And, he jumped down and spun around. It was extremely awkward. And after the match, they had 10 minutes before they'd start taping Rampage. Punk walked over and jumped up, climbed outside, jumped up on the ring apron and jumped off, and then went to the other corner to do it. And then he's looking at his thing and goes, I don't know what I did wrong. he tried three times to do it again. He was just like, I can do it, see? But he's just so mad at himself that, I mean, it was just – Botchamania. I mean, he covered. I mean, he's a professional. So, but that shit, the face paint probably got in his eyes. I mean, come on. So, but no, that was if it was a Dynamite, that would have been one of the greatest house shows I've ever been to. Seeing, Sting dressed with the straight edge face paint and Punk with the old Stinger. I mean, everyone loved it, and they were having so much fun. And Sting has really figured out how to work efficiently. I mean, he is a master of it. He's John Cena in this stuff at this point, and that's a compliment. So, I mean, he's really got his stuff down. And then for him to do the suicide splash on the top. It's just like, what are you doing, Sting? you don't.
I know.
He is immensely bigger than everyone else that he was in the ring with. Immensely.
Wow. How did Punk look? We were talking earlier on the show about how he seems to just appear more comfortable as time goes on, and just, you know, comfortable where he is in the ring and just working. Did you get that sense too, or was he still like not quite as polished as you remembered him being live?
Yeah, he was great. I mean, like he knows his character. I mean, you know, he knows what to do. That match, as I said, for me, it felt like a house show. Like, that's the cheesy stuff they do at a house show main event, you know, back in the day. So, like, that's what I felt like I was watching, which was fine. I mean, because I think, sorry, 2021 fans probably never saw what they used to do in a house show main event in 1992. You know, so like it was just, you know, you do the little spot. I mean, because we were expecting that Darby Allin was going to play Ricky Morton and do the hot tag, and I've seen that way too many times at the Greensboro Coliseum, so that's not what I wanted. But they just did the old school house show good guys beat up the bad guys match.
Yeah, no. And it came off that way too. You could tell that it was that people were hot for it, and that they were really working the match in an enjoyable way too. So yeah, you that all came across on TV. Well, it sounded like you guys ever had a really good time. I mean, obviously this is something you're going to do again, but how does it rank in terms of your AEW shows that you've been to, Johnny?
I'm gonna be in Raleigh January 12th. I think they're back in the Carolinas. I like the other one better. Number one, it was my first. I'd never been to an AEW show before the Charlotte show.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it was cool to see something different, and then the crowd. I mean, they were animal. Like, I really felt like it was like 1997. You know. Watching Nitro. I mean, as people were taking off their shirts, hooting and hollering. I was like, this is insanity. Like, I mean, I would like to think you don't take off your shirt and scream obscenities with children all around you. And there weren't. So, you know, maybe all the kids there tonight protected me from that environment, but it was pretty cool watching people hoot and holler and tear off their shirts.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, great. Well, Johnny, thanks. Thanks so much. Any other final stuff? And we'll let you guys, you know, get on with your night. Really appreciate the time here.
Sure. No, it was a great show. I'm glad. I'm glad I could share the story. So no, it was great. If you get a chance to check out AEW Live, I suggest you do. And if you're worried about, you know, hearing too many obscenities, maybe time it around Christmas.
There you go. All right, Johnny, appreciate it, man. A big fan. Pleasure talking with you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Johnny.
Johnny Fairplay, everybody. That's interesting.
Nice surprise.
Yeah, nice surprise, and Hook slapping Cody in the face. I mean, boy, I hope there's a cell phone video of that. I wanna see that, Joel.
Yes, yeah, they're shooting Hook to the moon, man.
We'll see. You know, again, I'm really curious about it because it's like, you know, he's a young talent. AEW needs those guys, and it'd be fun to watch somebody not an already made act, you know, just organically take off. That would be a blast, I think. And I think it'd be good for AEW too. And that's why I was asking, like, is this, you know, is that reaction just kind of like faddish in nature in terms of like, okay, Rusev Day, Fandango, or is it like, hey, legitimately, like this guy's got something. And, you know, it's too early to tell, but it's start talking about it now.
It's an intriguing thing to see. I mean, started off as kind of like an internet, like, intrigue thing of who's this guy standing in the background? Oh, man, it's Taz's son, and they're putting him in the forefront of these promos and stuff and just organically getting heat that way and just, He's got the look, you know, of this kind of, you know, Gen Z kid coming on the scene thinking he's all that. He looks like, you know, one of the YouTubers, TikTokers. I mean, he just fits the time of all that. And he's only 22 years old. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's wild. That is wild. Yeah, so we'll see. All right, we'll finish off with one last email here. It's from Zach in Texas, and he goes, "Gentlemen, WWE had an advantage when it came to the women's women's wrestling, while the women's division was AEW's weakest point. Over the course of this year, though, that surprisingly switched. WWE voluntarily gave up their advantage between roster cuts and shoddy booking, while AEW not so quietly built up their women's division nicely. Between the ongoing TBS championship tournament and the Sheeta versus Deeb feud, it feels like AEW is flexing when it comes to the women now. I love the story Ruby and Nia told in their match tonight, with Ruby having to use her cleverness to outsmart the bigger, stronger opponent. Is the women's division AEW's biggest success story of the year?" Thank you, Zach. Yeah, Joel, what are your thoughts? Is it?
Well, I think it definitely has improved. I mean, a ton. I mean, just by the additions that they've had, and they've developed a lot of the wrestlers that they have there. The booking's been a lot better as well. You know, I think it's definitely one of the successes that AEW has had this year. But, I mean, WWE just continues to self-destruct itself, I mean, with just awful booking. You know, they don't create any stars, whereas we're seeing AEW is, you know, that Ruby Soho, for example, is someone that they brought in here, and she got a really good reaction when she first debuted, and they just decide to run with that, you know, see how it goes. And I think that's what wrestling needs more of all around in these different promotions, is that when somebody gets hot and you know, the crowd really starts to go to cheer them, that you got to just move in that direction. And I think AEW is starting to listen to their audience a lot more when it comes to the women. And I think it's, you know, it's really improved.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too. Zach, I don't know that I can say it's the biggest success story of the year when you had, you know, CM Punk come out of retirement, Adam Cole sign and Danielson sign, and the payoff to Hangman Adam Page. That, you know, all successes and AEW's women division, the growth there is a success there too. It's certainly the kind of the most improved division in terms of attention. Like no question about that. I think you got some players that you can build around. Britt Baker really came into her own this year as champion and the top star of the division. And so, you know, I agree, Zach, with the premise of your email here, which is just, hey, like, AEW's turned a weak point into something that's stronger now. And I think it only can grow from here. I mean, look, you have, you know, Ruby, who's done a lot and been impactful, but still I don't think has really hit the ground running fully. Like, I still think you have to see that play out. I mean, you're going to do Thunder Rosa, right? I mean, you're going to do Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker at some point for the AEW Women's Championship. That's on the table. So even though they had such a great year and a successful year in the women's division in AEW, you still have a lot of cards to play too.
Yeah, there's a lot more to come. But Britt Baker, just the way that she's become, you know, one of their biggest stars that they have there. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment within that company, you know, how much she's gotten over. But I think that this is just kind of the first step in seeing what this division is actually going to become. That I think that, you know, going into next year, like you just mentioned, that they're setting themselves up to have a lot of really good matchups.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Joel, let's put a bow on it there. Any final Dynamite thoughts tonight?
No, I don't think so. I think it was just kind of a fun show, you know, with having that six-man tag match to cap it all off, that it's just, you know, like I mentioned before, it's amazing to see all those guys tagging with each other, you know, here at the end of the year and reflecting back on just the wild year in wrestling that it's been.
It's been that. I noted that on Twitter too. It's like 2021, crazy wrestling year amongst other crazy stuff too, but certainly for wrestling. But Joel, take a quick minute here. I know you kind of took a brief hiatus with your column, but talk about you know, your Torch contributions and what you've done for PW Torch and PWTorch.com and so where people could follow you on social media too.
Yeah, so you can follow me on social media, same thing on Twitter. I've taken a little bit of a step back recently. I've been, you know, dealing with some mental health, some physical health issues that I won't get too in-depth with. But, you know, and also just being really busy around this time. You know, my professional work and stuff has really taken me away. There's a lot of really big projects, you know, especially around the city here in Minneapolis that we're involved with. And so I've been not had a whole lot of time to watch extra wrestling. And so it's definitely taken a back seat, you know, as far as my priorities go. But I'm always going to be around, always contributing to the Torch. You know, I'll be more active on Twitter, you know, once we get past the holidays. But, you know, I'll always be involved, and I hope to do some more podcasting coming into 2022. But for now, the hits and misses is at least on a pause right now. We'll see what the future is of it. But if you want to check back on, you know, what I thought on some of the previous episodes of Dynamite, you can find those at pwtorch.com.
Very good. And yeah, great column to check out, even in hindsight, you know, to see like what was said, you know, for past shows. Well worth your time, and a really well-written column. But Joel, great to have you on the show this week. It's always a blast to talk AEW and wrestling in general with you, man. So I do appreciate it. Wade will be on the VIP side of things a little bit later tonight. Go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip to check out those shows, as well as, like I said at the top, a lot of other great, great in-depth pro wrestling podcasts that cover a wide variety of different topics. You'll love it. Well worth the money every month. pwtorch.com/govip. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Cador, and you can go VIP and check out my weekly audio show called On the Canvas. It's a show that talks about the art of wrestling. We dig into a specific current event every single week and just look at that from a artistic point of view, looking at the performance and the work, and just kind of leaving storylines and booking and stuff that we kind of take care of on these shows, and just open it up and for like an artistic discussion about wrestling. So go VIP and check that out. It's On the Canvas, and it comes out usually, you know, Fridays or Saturdays, depending on the week. And also make sure pwtorch.com is somewhere that you're going on a regular basis for your news, your editorials, all your show reports, so many podcasts. I can't even name them all. It's all there for you at pwtorch.com daily. Get your daily wrestling fix there. You'll be happy that you did. We've got a great group of contributors, that, you know, get content up regularly, in-depth analysis that you're just going to want to make sure you check out. It's pwtorch.com, and you can follow the Torch on Twitter at pwtorch. That's at pwtorch. And you can follow me on Twitter at zhadorntorch. But Joel, have a great holiday, man. Merry Christmas. Great working with you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Zach. It's great to talk to you before the holidays here. I wish you Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. And to everybody listening, you know, thank you for continuing to listen to PW Torch. I mean, to me, it's gotten me through a lot of hard times. It's been my go-to for all of my, you know, wrestling content, just listening to people, you know, give their opinions on stuff, get caught up with all the news. So I can't thank you enough for everybody's support and like I said, everybody listening.
Well said. Absolutely. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Thanks for the participation. Thank you for listening. But for Joel, I'm Zach. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. And we will catch you next time.